This is Classic Rain, archives from the Rain Report that have never posted before. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. So, let's open this new chapter of Rain. Now, once these classic episodes are uploaded to the RainReport.com, like this, they'll remain on the opening screen until the next upload. The Classic Rain archive will have its own link. Here in Classic Rain number 1, we're going to take you back 31 years to 1988. Controversy raged then, as it does today, as to what needs to be done to keep the U.S. amateur radio service viable. See what your thoughts are when you hear these two opposing commentaries from February 1988. The first was voiced by David Miller, NZ9E, a familiar voice on the Rain Report during the 1990s. He named his commentary, "The Other Side of the Story."
There aren't enough hams in the U.S. This is the battle cry we've all heard quite a lot of lately. We need to have more licensed amateur radio operators in this country if we hope to hold on to the frequencies that we presently have. The pressure from commercial and other interests will become greater in the future, and adding to our ranks now is the only way that we can hope to save our present spectrum. In order to swell our ranks and thus hold off the spectrum bandits, we must consider a no-code class of amateur radio license. This is the only way to increase public interest in the hobby. Is this really the truth? Do we owe our frequency allocations to our numbers? Is there another side to this story? Every story, as the old saying goes, does have two sides, and perhaps it would be best to take a look at the other side of this one. I have a winter 1963-64 call book that has 532 pages of U.S. amateur calls. They didn't give a figure back then as they do now on the total number of U.S. licensed amateurs, but each page contains about 600 individuals, which multiplied by 532 comes out to a bit less than 320,000 hams. That was in 1963-64. The 1986 call book shows the total census at just under 437,000 licensees in the U.S. The 1988 call book puts the same total at a shade below 460,000 U.S. hams. Are the ranks really dwindling, as some would have us believe? Another problem often cited in the reports on the U.S. amateur population is the median age. It's going up. Over 50 years old now, I've heard. Is that so bad? Amateur radio seems to have more appeal to mature adults, but I rather see that as a plus in many regards. It would be nice to have mature younger people joining the ranks, but if they aren't interested or can't put out the effort, do we really want or need them? As long as we have a steady influx of 50-plus-year-olds entering the hobby, the problem will be self-equalizing. Many people find it increasingly difficult to commit themselves to any hobby these days, with the pressures of job, family, home, etc. It's only when they find themselves clear of many of the responsibilities of modern life that they can afford the time and the funds to take up a consuming hobby like ham radio. Perhaps we would do well to focus our recruitment efforts on those nearer to retirement than on the younger crowd. Ham radio is a great hobby for the retired, as well as for those who might find traveling difficult. You can travel all over the world in one afternoon in front of your radio, most of us having done it. Getting back to the first issue, though, do we really need larger numbers to ensure the survival of the amateur bands as we know them? The FCC lists several reasons for the existence of the amateur radio service in Part 97.1. Briefly, they are: number one, to provide a non-commercial service, particularly with respect toward providing emergency communications. Two, to contribute toward the advancement of the radio art. Three, for advancing the skills in both the communications and technical phases of the art. Four, to provide a reservoir of trained operators, technicians, and electronics experts. And five, to enhance international goodwill. Interestingly enough, it says nothing about numbers, only skills and implied dedication. Realistically, there is another reason for our existence: to safeguard the bands allocated to us for use in time of war. That's right. We're keeping those frequencies clear of commercial traffic so that they can be available in case our government needs them for our national defense. Think about it. Firstly, all of the radio spectrum belongs to the DOD, the Department of Defense. FCC merely manages the portions given to them by the DOD for its other uses. Secondly, it's relatively difficult to take back frequencies from commercial users, because that interrupts commerce and industry to some extent, which is not very desirable in a wartime effort. It is, on the other hand, quite simple to tell the amateurs that they must shut down operations because the frequencies are needed for the military. Sound far-fetched? It actually happened like that at the outbreak of World War II. Ask any old-timer. The government closed down the amateur bands for civilian use and even confiscated, most of the time with compensation, a good deal of the amateur equipment. This may be our greatest asset to the government. We protect their frequencies on a day-to-day basis while amassing a sizable amount of state-of-the-art equipment, all at no cost to Uncle Sam. In return, we have access to the frequencies as long as the military doesn't need them. You won't find that in writing in the rule book, but that's the practical reason for our existence. And it makes good sense. Why else would Congress and the President go to bat for us when the FCC reallocated part of 220 megahertz to commercial interest? Because it was unfair to the amateurs? No, I feel that the only reason we can expect support from Washington is because of the above. We're holding the frequencies for the government for use in time of national defense needs. That's the only reason any government tolerates amateur radio. If you're willing to accept this as a possible other side to the story, then what must we do to ensure our survival given this scenario? Do we lower the requirements, making the amateur license a less valuable asset? Is it easier to self-police a group that worked hard to get where they are and place a great deal of value on their privileges? Can you even imagine trying to clear out the CB band in time of national emergency? I believe that keeping the standards high, yes, that means not making the license test too easy, will do more to ensure our future than by lowering the requirements. The government knows that if they ever need the frequencies, that we will cooperate because we value what we have. It seems to be human nature that we value what we have to work for. It was ever thus. Remember, nowhere in the rules does it say anything about numbers. But it does imply that quality is important. You can take that one to the bank. This is Dave, NZ9E.
David Miller, NZ9E, with his guest commentary, The Other Side of the Story. Time for you to identify your station. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back. You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com. Now, an opposing commentary filed just days after David's February 1988 op-ed piece. It was voiced by Mark Thompson, WB9QZB. Mark was the founder of the Northern Illinois Packet Council over 30 years ago. He contributed his Bites by QZB commentaries for the Rain Report during the 1990s. The following commentary preceded Mark's Bites from QZB commentaries.
I just listened to NZ9E's interview on the Rain dial-up service. I found the interview disturbing, particularly because of the complacency it could well breed. It demonstrates why ham radio isn't growing as fast as it could. NZ9E makes the point that all is well on ham radio and that we need to do nothing to increase the growth of ham radio. He says we shouldn't be concerned that the average age of ham radio operators may be 50 years old. That, in fact, that's good because it brings maturity into the hobby and is a good hobby for retired people. He also makes the point that as hams, we are just keeping the ham spectrum used until the Department of Defense needs it in time of war, and that we can be displaced easily, but commercial interests couldn't be. Well, if you believe that, then I guess there really isn't anything to worry about. But could there be another side to it? First, I believe we should be very concerned that few young people are getting into ham radio. Every phase of life requires young people to replenish the ranks, such as new college grads that fill entry-level jobs. Ham radio is no different. In fact, young people, though not as wise as us, bring not only naivete, but optimism, energy, and new ideas into the hobby. It's a known fact that teenagers are very impressionable from the ages of 13 to 16, and that is the best time to expose them to ham radio. So why bother when 50-year-olds are a whole lot less trouble? Well, first, we'll be starting them on what could be a lifelong hobby, and they may bring yet more people into the hobby, especially friends. Secondly, and more importantly, it encourages young people into technical careers that the U.S. badly needs to remain competitive in technical fields. I don't believe we can all be investment bankers or lawyers. So why do we need these new hams? Well, if the average age of hams is really 50, then a whole lot of folks are going to become silent keys in the next 20 years. But more importantly, those VHF, UHF, and microwave frequencies are worth billions of dollars to the commercial interest. And contrary to Enza and Dai's commentary, I don't see the military stepping in to save those 2 megs of 220 from commercial interests. Unless we use them and protect them, we're going to lose them. Which brings me to the next subject of a no-code license. It's certainly nothing new. Canon is implementing one. The ERRL and an independent group are both looking at proposing one to the FCC. Does that mean we'll have CB-type operation all over the HF bands? No, it doesn't. The WARC rules don't allow for no-code operation below 30 megahertz. But what it does mean is that bands like 6 meters, 220 in some areas, 902, and 1296 may actually get some use for a change. If a no-code VHF license is adopted, the main barrier to ham radio will be removed. Usage will soar, as will radio sales and activity in general, benefiting everybody. With their appetite whetted, some of those VHF and UHF operators will even study the code to get HF privileges. Now, that doesn't sound too radical, does it? Yeah, I know there will be those out there who will say, well, I had to learn the code, so they'll have to too. But ask yourself a question. Would you have gotten into ham radio sooner if there hadn't been a code requirement for VHF and UHF operation? I know I would have. We all need to do whatever we can to increase the growth in ham radio, but it's not going to happen without our efforts. Remember, if we don't use the VHF and UHF frequencies and protect them, we're going to lose them to commercial interests. Thanks for listening. My name is Mark, LEB9QZB.
And that concludes our first Classic Rain episode for the first weekend of August 2019. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Classic Rain number 2. Classic Rain is copyright from when the SATs were accomplished on stone tablets to 2019, Rain. All rights reserved. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. This is Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network.